Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. Sorry, it was out last week. I'm your host, Andrew Farmer. With me, as always, is my favorite Cole, the Houston brother, the Jedi Cole Houston, and his lovely wife, the Dame, Catherine Houston, has joined us tonight.
Is it something about a dame?
There's just something about
a dame.
There's nothing like a dame. It's old Hollywood. So
it's actually adapted from an old British aristocracy song.
That's true.
It's actually old, verse poem. You know, 'tis there are nothing like
it. It's in iambic pentameter, which is how I can't read it. I've got a weird form of learning disorder that doesn't let me be able to read iambic pentameter.
Yeah, Shakespeare was brutal.
He was brutal. Speaking of brutal, I apologize to everyone out there for not being able to make the very last Hey Kids Comics Live. As you all know by now, I've moved. I moved back to the ancestral lands of Avalon, known as Ohio, and it happened.
I was called to the point of origin.
We were sorry, but he left anyway.
I had to pass the test of the Green Knight, fight the questing beast. I took a ring to a mountain. It was awesome.
He also fought the questing beast.
I did. I also
constantly brushing its teeth.
I didn't
just
fight it as much as
Level Hawk and left.
Right. That's I didn't right. fight the yeah. cresting beast. I think I misspoke when I talked to you. I went to Kroger's and I had to buy some cresting yeast. I was baking. It's a whole different thing. But
crest.
For everybody out there that watched the live show, thank you so much for that. That's amazing. We are so glad we got a chance to do it for the time that we had to do it. Thank you to Deep Bellum. Thank you to Cole. Thank you to Jansen. Thank you to all our guests, including Catherine, that have been on, Eddie and Bobby and the guy and James Pickering and
Lacey
and everybody who is Danae. Everybody
wonderful
who,
Valentine episode.
Yeah, everybody who showed up for that thing. As you all know, that hour went really fast for us, but thank you so much for watching and tuning in and supporting it. You are all amazing, and we haven't said it enough recently, but I'm going to say it again now, that if you guys weren't out there listening to this thing, we wouldn't have spent an hour or 140 hours of our lives sitting behind a mic. Actually, that's a lie. We probably would have, but it wouldn't be nearly as...
There would be a lot more tears.
Yeah, it wouldn't be as fulfilling as it is for us if you weren't. So
absolutely.
And
I want to say, as the producer and editor, runner of the Jedi Cole universe, and having the blessing of being able to not only produce the show but co-host, rare it is that I want to impose myself on this show. The Rancor Pit's my baby. This is Andy's. And I actually did two things in the last few weeks. I made the editorial decision to cancel the live show because I did not see it being the same show.
Right.
Absent its actual host. We could be some facsimile thereof, but why bother? And the other decision I made was to preempt what would have been issue 140 in favor of continuing that damn live show into a pre-recorded show, because that hour went by far too fast, and I wasted enough of this one.
And as the host, I deferred to him as not only the producer and runner of the Jedi Cole universe, but also the keeper of a lot of good ideas, because it's a great idea. So
thank you. And I do want to one final thing on the live show, the Hey Kids Comics Live number 10. Apologies to Clay for forcing you to take your hat off so that you could wear your damn headphones. I know you like your little foppish hat there, but
I didn't realize that Clay donned a foppish hat for the show. He dressed for the occasion.
Well, he had his hipster hat, I guess you could call it.
I like that hat.
Yeah, it was a nice little hat.
You're just mad because hats don't fit you.
Well, that's Cole and I have equal and opposite problems, where Cole's oversized Paleozoic melon head is the exact opposite of my tiny halfling D&D gnome head, which is actually like 8 sizes too small. It's the opposite of the Grinch's heart. My head, nothing fits on my head. Cole,
that's
nothing fits on his head for opposite reasons.
They're like a pigeon on a flagpole.
Really?
And on your head, it's like a Weird Harold.
Well,
it just
drops
straight down about halfway.
Well,
down.
You remember that scene in the waiting room in Beetlejuice with the headhunter and the safari guy? That's me when I try to put on a hat. That's what I look like. So also speaking of brutal, right? We are to continue the live show discussing Daredevil, the TV show, and a title that Cole came up with for the live show, I did see, and I literally almost peed myself, which was, what are we talking about when we're talking about Daredevil?
What are we talking about when we talk about Daredevil?
And that was, to me, one of the best titles that Cole has ever come up with, period.
I had a couple of ideas kicking around, and that one just jumped out. Okay, we're... Here we have
it. That was great.
We're going to send this show off with a bang. We're going to pay tribute to one of Andy and my favorite films as well. So.
It was great. Yeah, Daredevil.
Yes.
For those of you that haven't seen the live show, I want to kind of go around the table real quick and just get an idea of kind of the overview, the 1,000-foot view of what you thought of the show. So,
okay.
Catherine, as our guest, why don't you start just real quick?
I absolutely loved it. It had enough exposition, but not too much exposition. It had enough little bit of romance, but not all. It didn't slow down the plot, and I liked all the characters and all the actors.
Perfect. So you give it a good rating. You think that people should watch it?
I say 5 out of 5.
Oh.
You should watch this thing.
Wow. Cole, what about you?
Yeah, I think this actually breaks the 5 meter.
Right.
And actually, it's like the cartoon thermometer that overfills and bursts at the top. This is a wash in red mercury. This is... What I would have to say, what strikes me, because I would... echo what Catherine said in such a way that it sounded like her voice only muffled and coming back to you from like canyons. But also, echo is quite the proper term here, because this show resonates beyond. Just last night, we had someone over to get an estimate on some home improvement work. And you know, naturally, when you walk into this house, you're immediately surrounded by Star Wars and comics and other the trappings of our various loves.
You're in Nirvana.
And,
right.
And, you know, that doesn't go unnoticed. Some people just sort of see through it or just kind of like, Pee-wee's house or something. And others, like this guy, is just to me like, oh, my son is he's not just a Star Wars fan, he's a fanatic. I'm a fan, he's a fanatic. And he is going, and so, you know, as we're going through all the process and we're waiting around for the things that have to be waited on and stuff like that, we're going back and forth between conversations of what we were there, the business end of things and the fun end of things, and we got talking about Marvel movies and stuff like that, and I said, well, do you have Netflix? And you know, you could tell it's like it was like striking the Bunsen burner, you know. I just had ignited this flame, and that really, to me, I thought was well timed, because it underscored exactly something I hadn't been able to articulate in the live show, is the fact that you can tell instantly if someone has watched this show.
Right.
Oh yeah.
Because
that's why
you say Netflix, and
the clothes that they do. It's so you can identify each other in a crowd.
Yeah, but you know, you're not half expecting to say, yes, Kevin Spacey's amazing in House of Cards. No, you know exactly what you have lit there.
Well, that's a really interesting thing, you know, that I think that not only is it a litmus test, but I think that Daredevil. We always talk, and Cole always chides me for saying this, but I always say it. I'll say it anyway, and I'll keep saying it. So suck it, Cole. We're living. We always say like we'll reference this in anything, and most of the time Cole's right. It's stupid, but we are living in a golden age of being able to take these comic book licenses. The technology and the interest level and the ability to translate it has come to fruition for us. Let's just put it that way, in a way that not only brings. Not only can fans of comic books, not only can Cole and I and Catherine and you know whoever are, the people that you usually hear on this show be able to watch Daredevil and be like, wow, I'm so glad that there's a Daredevil show. But people that were not comic book fans has popped up on Netflix and they said, we'll give it a shot. And all of a sudden, the people that are on this show become like, you know, the Raja. People are like, whoa, what does this mean? What is this? What is this? So knowing that you're a comic book fan, even in passing, this becomes a Tower of Babel.
I'll give you a quick example. I had an interview recently, and you can't talk about my life and all my jobs without talking about comics.
Mm-hmm.
And the last interview question, one of the interviewers asked me, he says, okay, he says, last question, Superman or Batman? And I thought a second, but I knew because fandom had taught me is always be yourself, but right. If you can be Batman, always be Batman,
right.
And so I said, it has to be Batman. And he goes, yes.
But that's an interesting segue point for this, because in a lot of ways, you know, of the licenses that we have from Marvel that we can popularize, that have already been attempted to be popularized, right. Daredevil is the Batman of the Marvel Universe. Nobody got that until now. Now people get it. Like before, we had the starting point of the the real starting point was in the Incredible Hulk, the trial of the Incredible Hulk, where they had Daredevil, which was the weirdest pairing that ever to appear on TV. But the real jumping on point was the Ben Affleck movie, because that was when this show launched.
Yes.
That was what people were saying was, I don't want to watch it. I saw the Ben Affleck movie, and
exactly,
you know,
And now the funny thing is, the hardcore Star Wars fans, or Star Wars fans, the hardcore comic fans are the ones who are like this guy last night, are just, you know, immediately the flame is lit, and you know, the discussion begins. And you're those who've had through Marvel cinema, through the advent of superhero cinema, have had their entree into superheroes and comics, are the ones who are like, way better than that Affleck thing.
Right, right.
It's like, you know, their frame of reference is a little more narrowly defined, but it becomes, there are two schools of Daredevil.
Right.
On Netflix. You have the, oh my God, you know, and the discussion begins ad nauseum, or you at least get, that was way better than that Affleck.
Oh yeah,
And then this and Affleck.
No,
and do you agree that now with comics being so much in the mainstream popular culture, the mainstream popular culture is really starting to get used to different actors being brought on to do the same character?
Yeah. Oh, of course.
Whereas with comic geeks, people who've read comics almost all their lives, they're used to a new writer and a new artist coming along and giving their characters longer hair and extra muscles and a different background and just changing everything.
Here's my thing about that.
No feet if it's LaField.
Right. No feet, hooves, or they're going to be standing in water the entire time. They're going to have shriveled up toes. Here's my thing about that. Right,
okay.
Catherine, it's an interesting dichotomy, because while comic fans are used to things like, you know, it goes from Waringo to Byrne to, you know, in every iteration the comic book's going to be a little different, the character's going to be a little different, the backstory's going to be a little different. When it comes to this, though, really, what the real interesting thing is, the comic book fans are the ones that are bitchier about it than the non-comic book fans. And it's because, regardless of who, for the most part, regardless of who took over at what time, when whatever comic book run was done, the character was the same. You know, Matt Murdock was Matt Murdock was Matt Murdock. Right. And he was always Matt Murdock. They can't see past that to say, okay, for instance, the big one for me right now is Chris Evans. Because Chris Evans was, you know, in the Fantastic Four, and now he's Captain America. You know, you can't have the same guy, you know, as Johnny Storm. Whereas the non-comic book fan, they don't care. And this goes back to what I've said since comic book movies have been coming out, at least after Green Lantern. Green Lantern was really the epiphanal point in my life when Ryan Reynolds was in Green Lantern to make me realize a certain, you know, indelible line. And that line is this. As a non-comic book fan, these movies are made for you. If you're not into comics as much, if you like the idea, you like action, you like high adventure and sci-fi, great. These movies are made. This is yours. Uh-huh. For Cole and I, and for, you know, Eddie and Bobby and whoever else, the big comic book fans, the guy's been reading for 30 years, we have thousands of issues of our Daredevil. We have thousands of issues of our Avengers, of our Batman. If we don't like what they did on the big screen, great. Good. Not for us. We've got ours. You can have yours. If the line, if the two sides cross, you know, if there's a crux and they cross, and I happen to like most of what they've done in the movies, great. Okay. Now I have another version to like. But my heart will always be with Frank Miller's Daredevil. I'm so glad. I am so glad that this show reflected that Daredevil. But I don't need it to. It could have been, you know, Jack Black is Daredevil in Howard the Ducks, you know, what, John Singleton's.
Howard the Ducks' Hell's Kitchen wet dream.
Right, and that would have been fine with me, because I can always go back and read Daredevil Year One with Frank Miller
and be fine with it. I'm more than happy to give you that. I would not go anywhere near Jack Black.
Well, you wouldn't have to, but that's
the
thing.
At that point, you lost me on that particular iteration.
And you wouldn't need to, because you could go back.
I mean, like if Will Sasso or something had...
Will Sasso! Good!
I would watch that, the Howard Duck Green one.
Will Sasso! Will Sasso!
I would not watch it.
I would like to praise this particular Daredevil.
Yes, yes, let's get back on that.
I'm lucky because... every time I travel to this foreign land, I have Cole to take with me.
Will Sasso.
So if I'm watching like Captain America, and they do something and pause for no apparent reason, I can look at Cole and go, "What did he say? What did he say? What was that? Why was that a thing?" And he says, "Well, you know, this character, blah blah blah." Okay, context. Yay.
We move on.
Daredevil, I didn't have to do that at all. All these characters made sense.
What happened
though? Some
with
underlying
Catherine,
thing going on. I was missing.
It was like pause it. You don't need these things, but pause it because by God, I'm going to tell you what that Easter egg was.
Right, right. You're imposing.
It doesn't matter.
You're imposing that power.
By God, you will be informed.
You're imposing your power. You're saying, I am the shaman. I'm going to take you on this journey, whether you like it or not. You took the peyote when you sat down to watch this. I'm going to guide you through.
Damn it!
Right. So what? I know what you guys talked about, you know, more or less on the live show. So there are a few things that I personally, and I think that they run in line. Catherine was talking, we were talking before the show. The thing that really impressed me the most, and at this point, I feel that we should warn you, and I'm sure we'll warn you in the post. Cole will see to it that this is probably going to get spoilerific. So if you haven't spent the 13 hours watching it, do yourself a service before you listen, and, you know, to your life as a whole, and sit down and watch this thing. But that being said, moving forward, this thing decided early on, A, that like Catherine said, they were going to tell the story this is one of those interesting things, because we've all sat down individually and said, we don't need another origin of Batman, to be told.
Right.
We don't need another origin of Superman or of the Hulk or of Spider-Man. Just put us in the world and it'll be fine.
Yeah.
This needed an origin, but the way that they did it was so well done that you didn't even realize you were getting an origin story.
Yes.
Because they were feeding it to you almost in the way that Arrow kind of ham-fistedly did it, which was in that...
We talked a bit about that on the live show, about how, you know, the other approach you can take is reminding everyone of your origin at the beginning of every episode.
Right. And also doing hard flashbacks, like, that didn't really pertain to the story. You know, Arrow, I still like the flashbacks because I like the idea of it, but the whole thing was, you know, okay, now we're going to the island, everybody go to the island with me, you know, we're there. In Daredevil, they kind of slid it in by you, where you're like, okay, we're in this thing that's pertinent to this, we're going to talk about his childhood, we're going to have a childhood flashback. Okay, we had that, now we're back to the main story. It didn't break the story in order to do that.
Exactly. And what made me happy to tears, and this is the ultimate spoiler, so just deal with it. Ultimately, over time, you realize that Daredevil has just tons of cash because his dad, through this fight that was supposed to be rigged, that probably led to his demise. Doesn't remind us constantly that he's responsible for his dad's death. For that, I love Daredevil very much.
Right. I mean, what they did, which is in the comics as well, but is often shied away from, was they took the things, the opposite of the bar approach. They took religion and politics and folded them into this thing so well, because Daredevil as a character in comic books has always been a Catholic character, and he's always carried the traditional, and in the comics it's a little more ham-fisted than it has been in this, but that's a function of the narrative, the Catholic guilt with him. Wherever he went, he carried that Catholic guilt. And they did it so well in this that he carried the guilt of his father to the point where he didn't need to talk about it. You knew it was there.
Yeah.
Like,
it was lacking. It was just a scene, you know, in their freewheeling college days where, you know, maybe he and Foggy had a falling out at one point. He says, at least my dad didn't, you know, some of our dads didn't put us through law school.
Right, but I think
it would be like,
but does Foggy even know?
Supremely cruel thing to say.
But does Foggy even know? Because by that point, I actually
genuinely don't want that to happen.
Right. At that point, he was Daredevil without, and that's the other thing is, and that's the other line you draw between, and I want to ask this question because we've all watched the show now. At what point does he stop being Matt Murdock and start being Daredevil? You know, at what point in his childhood does he stop, and he just never dons the mask? You know, and he might not have acted on it. You know, he explains in the show how, at what point that real crossover happened, but, you know, much like Bruce Wayne isn't Bruce Wayne, he's Batman that wears a Bruce Wayne suit. You know, I get the feeling that Daredevil is Daredevil that wears a Matt Murdock suit. And
I think you could argue is that the character of Stick not only shows up to train him, but his showing up to train him is simply that last element, that last component of a catalyst that the young Matt Murdock was already going to have to deal for the rest of his life with the demise of his father, a really poorly realized way of leaving a legacy.
Right.
granted, he's probably much better off than he would have been if Dad had lived and continued to be a prize fighter and gone all Pulp Fiction and, you know, prize fighters don't have an old timer's day and stuff like that. But I think that it's almost, as much as I groan to say this because I thought conceptually it was ridiculous, there was a Marvel miniseries called Powerless.
Right.
Which tried, to my way of thinking, granted I never read the damn thing, I saw enough of it to kind of see that it was just trying very hard to crowbar the idea of Peter Parker, Logan, and I don't know, some other couple other characters who, you know, they would have done these things regardless.
Right.
And I think, yeah, that's great, except no, it doesn't work, because there's nothing in Peter Parker's, you know, there's nothing about Peter Parker that would have driven him to become a vigilante or do, you know, lift a damn finger. Even the death of his uncle wouldn't have had the impact but for the fact that he was dicking around with his powers.
But
I think you can see in Daredevil, in Matt Murdock, in this incarnation, exactly what they were trying to do with Powerless.
Right. Now, by the way,
I felt the character, whole character of Stick was just tacked on.
No.
And unnecessary, because and I think the character of Stick paid a disservice to what he was able to accomplish on his own. His dad was a boxer, and I'm sure he showed him some moves as soon as the kid
but he couldn't see
walk.
Him.
Oh, Cole.
Oh, now.
Too soon.
Okay, that's how we're going to
So Catherine, I hear what you're saying. Now, let me counterpoint by saying this. Yeah,
but Catherine is speaking as an outsider.
Right, so I'm gonna give a little education to everybody out there that might feel like Catherine does. Number one, Stick is integral to the storyline of Daredevil.
He's like the Shredder for the Turtles. Or what was it? What's the rat one?
Splinter, but not even
Splinter,
really
sorry.
That.
Shred, Splint. Whatever.
Stick does play a larger role in the comics. Okay, they did tack him into the show, but he's going to have to come back next season. So they needed to introduce him early so that they could bring him around when they bring in the Hand. He's going to be integral to that storyline with the Hand, which is how he comes in more in the comics versus, you know, we get the backstory of how he trained, you know, Matt Murdock.
They had to introduce him now so he wouldn't come out of nowhere.
Yes, exactly. Okay. And they introduced him in the episode with the Hand, which is the Yakuza Japanese contingent of the crime families represents, in order to be able to do that next season, or even in the Defenders if they decide to do that, or maybe even in Iron Fist. So we're going to see all of that stuff come into play later. And one of the interesting things to know that is if you watch the S.H.I.E.L.D. show, the TV show S.H.I.E.L.D., Daisy, or Skye, as she was known for the first couple seasons, was from the same orphanage that they had Matt Murdock in the Netflix show.
Oh, get out!
Oh, nice!
Yes.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah, so this has become kind of the weird child's home for future superpower children. Also, it struck me as odd, and I never got this from the comics. Here's the thing about Stick that got me from the show that I never picked up in the comics was that apparently he just drives around in a van with free candy in it, picking up superpower kids to train them. And I never got that from the comics, but like I've trained other kids like you. Really?
It's like one of those things where, like, you know, dogs can smell cancer and
exactly the cat in the hospice.
He's like driving around. Smells superpowers. It's like that kid. He just reeks of superpower. I need to train his ass. Ice cream.
And since we're on the topic
of ice cream and a big stick to your ass.
Since we're on the topic of Stick, I kind of want to talk about some of the other one-off or side characters that they introduced in the show. Obviously, we had Foggy Nelson and Ben and Karen Page. Those are and Kingpin, which I know you guys talked about on the live show. Those were your big name.
Not really
guys.
Enough because God knows, could have done
we could show. Do this show for the next 5 hours and it wouldn't be enough. But we got those guys in, and D'Onofrio. I think the acting of the Kingpin was so brilliant, and I've been telling people this, that you know how good a show is when they introduce a character, and in the first 5 seconds, before you even see the character's face, you know everything you need to know. And they did that with this. It was so brilliant, where you see his finger twitch when he's looking at the painting. That's all you need to know. That's everything about that character that you need to know. That's
Especially
one thing,
because
one thing that I said
more
before
poignant.
That I wanted to say again about that character is that character could not be Lex Luthor, and he wasn't.
Right.
He was totally unique and not Lex Luthor at all, and I was so impressed by that.
Were you expecting him to be?
Talking about the finger twitch, I want to touch on that very quickly, is that it becomes it. What I love is these little layers that peel away. So, you know, when he's looking at the painting and his fingers twitching, it's sort of telling of the character. You, like you say, you see this character, and then it becomes something greater,
right,
than you ever imagined.
But we had,
and you almost see like a hammer in his hand,
right? And yeah, but we had the owl, and I wanted more than anything for there to be at least a little bit of a reference to the owl, as us comic book fans know and love him. But
yeah,
but that would have been kind of ridiculous, you know. But
the thing is, though, there was a bit. And what I love is, again, it's that wonderful, brilliant subtlety of this production. There was a tiny nod in the wardrobe.
There was, yes. The pattern of the wardrobe and the way
that
it set.
They gave him the ridiculous sort of, like, you know, from the Hellfire Club collection.
The tartan green Hellfire Club. Yeah, yeah.
With the, like, the double shoulder, colossal waste of fabric type of
yes,
approach to making an overcoat.
Right. But they also
that went out of fashion when people said, you know, we're wasting a lot of money on extra fabric.
But the one that got by a lot of people that weren't comic book fans, and the one that's going to come back, and I hope that Marvel's smart enough or can attain the rights enough to do it in Doctor Strange, is Rosario Dawson as Claire Temple, otherwise known as the Night Nurse.
Yes.
Hell's Kitchen's own, you know, fix 'em up. Like I said about, you know, any action movie or comic book
why
world.
She okay? So she is a prominent character, because I'm thinking, this gal is gonna. Any sane woman would dump this guy in a heartbeat, move and change their name.
Well, she's prominent enough that she appears in a lot of the and she has her own comic book series as of right now. They just released it under the new Marvel since the weird Secret Wars thing. But
yeah, because she actually had her own title in 1972 and 73
okay,
as well.
Okay,
where she is, she is the female sometime. Female love interest of Doctor Strange when Clea's not running around, and love interest of Matt
goes
Murdock
by the General Hospital for a booty call, you know.
Right, like
she's into this because it's her thing.
Well, she really
likes this stuff.
She's the field medic for these guys. Like she'll show up and
okay.
she's the person that you can knock on the door at 3 a.m. when you have, you know, 17 arrows and a baton sticking out of your ass, and she'll patch you up and send you on your way. That's what she becomes. I mean, and she's been portrayed as being, you know, is wearing the old nurse, like in the 70s, she wore the kind of candy striper nurse uniform.
With a little hat.
Yeah. Like, she was
her
own character.
She's also the one
character.
Where the X-Men would, like, where Wolverine would come and, like, knock on the door at 3 a.m. with his, like, just, you know, degloving injury and giant gashes all over him.
Right.
And then she goes and runs and gets her medical kit. He's like, ha, just a joke,
let's do it.
Yeah. So, like, you know, he
let's
got
bang.
Out of that one time.
Like, I'm here.
You got any more of that beer I left in the fridge?
Right, like I paid you the tithe of letting you look at my damaged body, now let's smang.
That's right.
Like, that's...
I
paid Charon the toll to cross the River Styx, now.
That's right.
But yeah, so that's
that helps a lot, because I was willing to let the femme fatale move in with them as like the free job, because it's like, I have nowhere else to stay. I'm gonna hang out here and I'm working for you for free. I'm not really homeless.
Right. But
I also have to point out that the original Night Nurse comic,
right,
its tagline was something to the effect of, the Night Nurses encounter danger, drama, and death.
Ooh.
So, yes.
I mean, she finds herself in the sticky wicket, which she did in the show, too. But, you know, she finds herself in the sticky wicket quite a bit as well. So, you know, that's
okay.
That's her shtick.
Well, at least I get to see her again, because I really love her.
Hopefully they do it, yeah.
Actress and the
oh, yeah, Rosario Dawson.
Well, I just didn't know why she didn't dump him.
Right. There was also
it became like this almost weird twisted Helsinki syndrome.
Yeah, kind of after a fashion, like
yeah, it's sort of like this the softer side of Helsinki.
Also, let's not kick out the idea that my favorite character in the entire show was the guy, and you'll have to help me with the name. Was it Melvin Potter?
Melvin
the Gladiator.
Yeah.
So good that they included him.
Melvin Potter, when he first appeared, I kid you not, I had just bought the Eagle Moss Gladiator. So I had that damn magazine around here freaking somewhere, and I'm just like tearing the house up trying to find that picture. The magazine, because I wanted to make sure, is that who it is? Screw it, I'll look up Gladiator. Okay, we're good.
So yeah, Melvin Potter
on the live show, he becomes a catalyst, really.
Yeah, and you know, and that was, they used him to such a great effect in the show, and it had one of those classic Marvel falls back on the old chestnut of let's leave some schematics laying around so people can see them, and because they did it with Captain America's shield and Iron Man,
exactly.
Now they've done it with this.
Robot body,
right? And now they've done it with the Gladiator, because not only do you get to see his Gladiator costume in schematic form, but you also get to see my A1 favorite C-level Marvel villain's costume in the works,
exactly.
Which is Stiltman. Stiltman got a nod in the Daredevil show.
Catherine can tell you, I was ecstatic that Stiltman.
Oh yeah, we had to pause and talk about that.
I'm like, oh my god, they have given a nod to Stiltman.
Andrew, what was your opinion? Who did they say that they had hostage that they were going to hurt unless this guy did all this stuff for him?
Black Sky? Was it that one?
I had a theory that it was probably like a rabbit or something like that.
The kid? Was that the...
Well, they were talking about that they refer to their captive,
yes,
whoever they're holding in sway. But the thing that Catherine had a really brilliant idea is, I don't know if there's any history with Melvin Potter in the comics as having, you know, any kind of family or, but you know, your mind is immediately thinking, okay, you know, they've got his girlfriend, his mom, his daughter, you know, his wife, fill in the blank.
Right.
And Catherine said, you know, what would be so cool is if when there's a reveal, it's like a puppy or a rabbit.
Right. Because you get the feeling that he's the Lenny of this universe. He's a big, brute, strong killer of a man that isn't the brightest. He's really good with mechanics. He's really good with building things and making
things. I
equated
him to being Master and Blaster.
Right. He's
one,
but his social skills are not that strong. Let's just put it that way.
The thing is, they exemplify that beautifully in one tiny piece of preemptive exposition, because it doesn't. It's what I love about this is there's all this exposition that you have to wait, like the twitching of the hand, to realize his exposition, and the point when Leland and Wilson Fisk are there at the workshop.
Okay, getting fitted for the suits, yeah.
Yes. And Leland says the boy's half an idiot.
Right.
And Wilson said it's the other half that matters.
Exactly.
And it isn't until a couple of episodes later that you realize the scope of what that simple line means. Is that this guy is a mechanical savant.
Right.
A material savant. He's like one of the guys that would have been doing like the robot building contest at MIT, but he just didn't have the social skills or the education to...
He isn't well-read, but he just has a knack. And the cool thing, here's the other thing about that particular scene and what we see as prior to that scene, is that they do such a good job of foreshadowing everything. Everything. Yeah. For instance, down to the point where Wilson Fisk, we find out very early on in the Wilson Fisk story arc that he's wearing, you know, bulletproof suits, Kevlar suits.
Yeah.
Okay, so they introduce that. And if you're wise and you start studying it, and then they fit Leland for, because he says he wants one of those suits, so they fit Leland for one of those suits. They introduce you to Melvin Potter. You can start to if you're wise enough to start realizing it, because you know that at some point Daredevil's going to get his suit. So
right.
not
yeah.
only have they said this material exists, we're not going to etherize, you know, we're not going to catalyze this based around some how do you get your suits made? You know, that's always been one of the things, like, okay, the Fantastic Four have unstable molecules, whatever that means. Spider-Man apparently mm-hmm. sits in his bedroom sewing, you know,
yeah.
intricate spandex.
$1 million suits, yeah.
Right. Tony Stark.
No former home ec experience.
Right. Tony Stark makes it.
And, of course, there's Hulk pants, which are inexplainable.
Right, which Banner invented in his off time. But, you know, how do these guys get their suits? Now we know, and we got to see the evolution of how that happens. Like, Daredevil shows up in this thing and says, I need protection, you know, and can you make me this, and, you know, I'll help you. That whole thing goes down, and that was amazing to me. The biggest reveal for me, outside of Stiltman, was Madame Gal and her heroin trade.
That was wicked.
Madame Gal, the entire Madame Gal thing, and you can talk, I watched it sitting next to Lacey, and she can tell you that I was losing my mind anytime Madame Gal was there, because that story is straight out of one of my favorite modern comics, which is the Matt Fraction Iron Fist run, because they are... That is the Immortal Cities. That Madame Gao is from the Immortal City, one of the Immortal Cities. The stamp on her heroine is from the Steel Serpent, who is the Iron Fist's main competitor. That is the crest. Iron Fist has the dragon on his chest. The Steel Serpent has that serpent logo that's on all the little heroin packets on his chest. So at the end of the show, when she's like, "I'm gonna go."
She's going back home.
And they're like, "Well, how can we?" And she's like, "No, it's
yeah." Because I was wondering that, because I remember Catherine and I talking about. I thought, I wonder if that's connected to that Brigadoon-esque.
Yep. Yes, it is. So that's
Celestial World or whatever.
So that whole thing for me was amazing, because they're introducing the Iron Fist world into this. They're saying that these cities exist. We're going to address it. We're going to introduce the Steel Serpent, which is something we've already done through this weird heroin thing, you know?
Yeah, they're basically, you're getting those wonderful building blocks that, mm-hmm. you know, where the cinematic universe built into the Avengers and unfortunately did not succeed as well with the second one.
Right.
It became more an attempt at throwing a bunch of building blocks into what should have been the fully realized film. But what you're doing is the wonderful thing. A lot of people were like, why Guardians of the Galaxy? And even before I was hooked before seeing it, even before I saw the first trailers, you know, I was sort of like, I had a passing interest. But I could tell people the reason you have Guardians of the Galaxy is because a lot of these films are going to introduce conceptual... The Marvel Universe is tremendously disjointed.
Mm-hmm.
If you try to introduce all of this in mass, and that's the biggest thing that Warner doesn't get. You cannot give us all of these disparate things that have been around so long when nobody gave a damn.
Right.
And try to make that viable. What Marvel did is say, okay, here's technology. That's a given. Here's genetics, or, you know, messing around with the chemicals,
right.
genetics, and things like that. That's a given. Now let's give you another dimension with Thor. Let's give you the rest of a greater universe
right.
with Guardians of the Galaxy. These are all entrees into... Doctor Strange is going to open the door even further mm-hmm. into mystical realms that are just beyond. Personally, I pray that we get the mindless ones.
I'm sure we will. We almost have to.
Because that would just... To see that sort of thing running riot.
Well, let me ask you guys something.
Yeah,
please. With badness like that, Who would possibly give a crap about the drug trade?
But that's the thing, is we need... that's why this is so important. Because you've got Ultron, you've got Loki, you've got Malekith, you've got the Mindless Ones and Dormammu, possibly. You've got, the Infinity Stones and Thanos. Who looks after the little guy? Daredevil. Yeah. Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, Iron Fist.
The Defenders, basically.
Right, they're little guys Avengers. So that's...
They're the street-level Defenders.
This is the cool thing, is that this is the Marvel... What they've done is they've given us the macro. Given us the universe. They're going to give us beyond the universe. They've given us, time and space. And now we get street-level... This is what matters to you.
They're tying that directly into what's brilliant here is by not touching your street level heroes until now. You've got two Avengers movies under your belt. You've got all these other building block movies under your belt. You've got more stuff on the way. You've got Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. giving you the government agent thing.
Right.
You've got all of these things that act as, in their own way, the catalyst for Daredevil, for Luke Cage, for all of these characters, because suddenly it's okay to go out and look out for the little guy and not be a multi-billionaire or some sort of magic rendering machine that forges steel and iron out of thin air. Otherwise, apparently, Tony Stark's mansions had some sort of giant foundries down in the
basement. Right.
Never see. I appreciate that you could probably create some sort of 3D printer that hauls this stuff into existence, but you do need some raw materials.
So speaking of street level, and I know this is something that I can't stop talking about when I talk about this show, and I know Catherine wants to talk about it and Cole wants to talk about it, is the sheer unadulterated brutality that they introduce.
Oh my gosh. And how much beating and organ damage and blood loss can one person heal off in less than a week?
Well, and the real brutal part for the audience is, we watch the Avengers and we watch Guardians of the Galaxy and we watch the Iron Man movie and the Thor movie, and people are knocking themselves, across counties and blowing up planets and, destroying cities and we don't see. So when you hit somebody with the reality of what it would be like to not really have superpowers, because the thing about Daredevil is, and they've done a much better job with this than I think they've done with any hero before, is say, this is a dude. Okay, so he has, the ability to know if somebody's in another room. That's basically it.
He's
agile because of it, because he knows his surroundings in a 360 degree parameter. Like, he knows what's behind him, and he has this inherent no fear attitude, and that's not necessarily a superpower.
And he also has that ability. One of the things that struck me is this sort of concept that the most successful fighter, the most successful technique you can adopt in fighting, is to simply not be there when the blow is landed.
Right. Right.
And that is ultimately what he's able to do better than most, but that doesn't mean blows don't land. And you're talking about, like, the juxtaposition of, like, Avengers and other movies. Look at Captain America.
Right.
Okay, when Captain America goes toe-to-toe with the Red Skull, they're, it's like battle bots, because it's two... things that aren't going to take a lot of physical damage from each other, yet they can still just smack at each other and, they have at least the physical effect of knocking each other on their ass. They both get back up, they both knock each other on their ass again. But people fighting people, even if they're fairly evenly matched, like a pair of boxers, they're going to tear the living crap out of each other after
there's no durability. Humans are very durable to the environment, but they are not durable to damage. That's the thing, to one-on-one violence. And in interviews,
Andrew, I want you to touch on the learning curve on leaping between buildings.
Okay, here's the thing about Daredevil.
Justify that for me,
okay,
would you?
So here's the thing about Daredevil.
I try.
All right.
Because of Daredevil's unique ability, which is
echolocation or something.
Well, it's not even echolocation, really. He has this ability to understand tactily. Because, so imagine that you're blind, and they say that when you're blind, all your other senses are enhanced. Well, for Daredevil, all your other senses are enhanced by 100.
Right.
So they don't do a good job of explaining that in the show, but I don't think that they have to. So, not only can he, through smell and sound and all that culminates, your brain takes all that information in and creates an image, and they do such a brilliant job, only once, mind you, in the entire show, of representing that that image that paints a 360 picture in your brain. Your brain takes all of that sensory in and makes something out of it. So for him, that's what it makes. When you touch something, you know what it is on almost a molecular level. Okay, so if you can get from building A to building B, and people do parkour, people jump from building to buildings in real life.
Yeah,
but
I know, but he doesn't just parkour; he tear asses
right
down some block that he's never been on before, and simply leaps exactly not too short, not too long,
right.
How far he needs to leap.
Because he knows.
The thing about it is, because he can take all the data, air pressure,
temperature, sound, some echolocation from the sound, but, you're getting smell, you're getting, and all of that stuff on an atomic level getting entered into your brain, and then he literally gets a map of, okay, I know my body to the point where if I jump from here, I will land there. If I jump with this tension, this strength, from this rooftop at this particular point, I can land on that rooftop at that particular point and stick the landing because I know the exact traction. I can feel the traction in my feet. I can hear when I take a step, the exact bounce off of that wall versus that wall.
It would be like having some sort of supercomputer
right.
that is rendering in real time, instantaneously, every piece of data. And it would be like accessing Google Earth and the New York City street grid and all.
Well,
of
understand,
this data.
But what if there's a little power line there? What if it's wet
he
and
knows.
Slippery?
He
what
knows.
If someone's
he
raising
knows that because he
chickens on the rooftop.
Okay, so let me ask you this:
he can
trip
hear the chickens,
chicken.
He can smell the chickens.
Okay,
from
stop for a second. Okay, you go
become chickens of the mind.
You go get dinner, right? You pick up a fork. You use that fork to pick up whatever. You put it in your mouth. You can reach over with your left hand. You can grab a glass. You can look at that glass with your human eyes and know that there's condensation, so it might be a little slippery. I know
with
how to grab
eyes.
That. I know that I need to shift a little to the left to reach this because you can see it. You have depth perception. You see in 3D. He can do that, but he can do that for miles in all directions. And understand the density, and understand the tactile nature, and understand all, and understand everything about that. So that's his superpower. That was what he was given. That's the best way to explain it.
And okay. You also have to understand that, granted, like Luke Skywalker, he left the training program early. Matt Murdock. Was physically trained. He's not just like some guy who was sitting around eating potato chips and one day his eyes quit working and the next day he's out jumping roof to roof. He
right.
did have a concerted, downright brutal training in the martial arts, which, the kind of brutal trouncing that Bobby Blakey gave Andy
right.
When we tried to do our to show him some of the was nothing compared to a stick just beating the living crap out of
now,
a child.
Now, also imagine that because of this ability that you have, you almost remove the human condition of fear. Right? That's gone. So,
yeah, and basically Daredevil's tagline in the comics was it was always Daredevil, the man without fear.
Because
and
he
that's
doesn't.
The idea. He does not have that reflex. The fight or flight is so grossly altered in him, it's more fight than flight.
Yeah.
There is no, I mean, a man can run up to the edge of a building, like, you know, take, for example, the old chestnut of running up to the edge of the cliff, and, you know, there's the 300-foot drop into the river, and Butch and Sundance are always going to stop at the edge
right.
of the river, or the Jurassic World kids, or whoever. Everybody stops, except him, because it's a combination of just this brash lack of those basic human, hey, whoa, you might want to think this through
right.
instincts that, granted, exist in the real world in real regular people known as douchebags, but in his case, unlike the drunken douchebag, for example, he has the ability to know exactly how to physically hurl himself to the optimum point that, of hitting the deepest water.
So he's not held back by human, by that human condition.
Maximize his fall and minimize shrinkage upon hitting the cold water.
So he says, okay, so every human, regardless of who you are, I don't care how versed in parkour or how far you've, how many times you've run a course or how many mm-hmm. times you've jumped from building A to building B, mm-hmm. every normal human being is going to have that moment of fear or anxiety as they approach the edge of that thing that's going to hold them back. He has none.
Right.
So okay. he's just going to run straight head on, full strength, full speed, make the jump, be able to, you know, real-time render the next thing.
Instantaneously.
If he lands on a chicken, he just compensates.
Right, right.
Well, that's the chicken's misfortune. But, you know, by way of example...
Ooh, I wonder if he's ever beaten up the wrong person. No, you got a crowd full of people, and then you, like in the bar, you got a crowd full of people, and you have victim and bully standing off. And, you know, you spin around a lot in these fights.
Oh, sure.
What if he gets disoriented and zones in on, like, the wrong person, like the bartender or something, and tries to go wail on the bartender, and the bartender's like, no, no, and he's like, no, shut up, people. And I was like, no, seriously, it's a...
no, that would be...
He doesn't have to worry about something, because like, he's got the combination of being... He's got the scent of the guy who needs a beating.
Right, he's Wolverine of he, you know, they give Wolverine like I can smell far, but Daredevil, Daredevil really can pinpoint it. But then again, in Daredevil's mind, here's the thing, right? Let's say like the bartender takes a stray punch,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Well, Daredevil doesn't draw. He's Punisher light, so Daredevil doesn't draw a line between the guy who served the guy who murdered the kid a drink and the guy that murdered the kid as easily as, let's say, a Spider-Man would. So if that guy catches a stray punch, so be it. He was in the wrong place at the wrong time, and if he wouldn't have been working in a place that served that guy a drink, he wouldn't have to worry about it.
And the thing about it is, the bartender may take a stray punch, but I guarantee you, the next day, that poor priest is going to hear all about it.
Right. That's the whole point of the religion, yeah.
He will dwell upon this, and no volume of our fathers, no truckload of Stations of the Cross or the Rosary, nothing will ever atone in Matt Murdock's tortured soul. The fact that Buddy of Buddy's sports bar mm-hmm. took one to the chin that was belonged to somebody else. So
now,
there is that.
And then there's the other part to this, and the part that I love about this show, and it's not even a Daredevil thing. I love that they did it with Daredevil, and I love that they incorporated it, was the fight coordinator has said in interviews, they asked him, you know, before the show came out and after the show came out, you know, what were your influences? What did you want to do? And he said his biggest influence for every fight scene that he did was Old Boy. The original Old Boy, the Korean revenge thriller. And the thing that they did in Old Boy better than any movie I've ever seen is make an allowance for the fact that when real people fight for more than a minute, you know, this is the reason they have rounds between boxing matches. This is the reason that people don't see 10-minute YouTube fights of people fighting. It's because it is the most exhausting experience you can possibly have. They get tuckered out fast. real fast. So you see this so many times in this show where, like, the they blew the fight load, the climax, in the second episode of this show, which was brilliant.
Oh, yes.
That fight scene where he goes to rescue the kid and he's walking down the hallway and he stops, and I think it was one of the most brilliant things I've seen in any show. He stops because of he's Daredevil. He has the ability to, and ducks into that room. You know, he just walks, all of a sudden he stops and just sidesteps into that room, and just you hear the fight. You don't even see it. You hear it, and all of a sudden a guy comes through the door, and he stumbles out, and he is exhausted. Like, his arm against the wall, and everybody in the scene is committed. They're like, okay, we're committed to this fight. We have to see it through. Nobody's walking away from this, so let's just keep going. Like, you know,
and
that's the feeling.
Also, that scene brilliantly illustrated the basic human tenet is there's seven of us, or however many of us. There's one of you.
Right.
And it was this Jack Reacher, you and what army kind of thing. It's just, you know,
right.
It's going to take a little while.
But it also shows...
I may miss, like, the first 10 minutes of my favorite show.
But I'm going to take you with me.
But I will go home with every one of your blood on my hands. And you will all go home with missing teeth and broken bones.
It shows...
Well, he does have the good guy advantage in that bad guys apparently just don't lock doors.
Well, it doesn't matter. He's going through it anyway.
To.
Yeah.
The door they had to lock was the one the kid was behind.
And they didn't even lock that one.
Why would you? There's like 13 dudes, right? Like, who's going to come get them? But here's the thing. It also shows early on in the show how tenacious, how, you know...
Committed
he is going to be to every fight. Again, because he doesn't have fear, because he knows how bad it's going to hurt going in. Like, you get that feeling that he knows in advance that he is going to get the ever-loving shit kicked out of him, and he does it in every fight scene, but he's going in anyway, and he's going to stay with it until it's done. Like, that's it. Like
especially in that case, because the beautiful way that scene was rendered, number one, you have the static shot in the hall.
Right, the single
shot,
yeah.
You get this unblinking look at this brutal, ongoing brawl that the upper hand goes back and forth.
Right.
There is every chance that this may not pan out. But at the end of that hall is the brass ring. The prize is at the end of that hall. And that's what's brilliant about that scene is it is literally a microcosm of the hero's journey.
Exactly.
Because he is fighting the dragon and the serpent and the ogre and the cyclops and that weird little guy that was inconsequential and you just had to stab him. But, you know, all of the things that it takes.
That was downright poetic.
Yeah. It's absolutely true. And the other thing in a technical aspect, if you were to talk to Bobby or anyone, you get into a lot of these shows and a lot of these movies and a lot of these things where it's an action thing, right? And you get a lot of really eloquent fight scenes. You get a lot of give and take and back and forth between whoever's fighting. The thing that they do so brilliantly in this is that Daredevil is going to take the shortest point between A and B. Whatever that is to get you on the ground so that he can move to the next person, he's taking that route. And that you don't see that a lot. So, you know, he's going to be as brutal as humanly possible to get you out of his way. And he does it in every fight scene they do. There's no eloquent. The only one that I saw was in that scene where the guy was getting up and he did this little flip to hit him in the face. Like, that was it. It was the last thing. But that might have been the fastest thing.
Yeah, it's sort of like, okay, you know.
I had to try.
It's like that old beer commercial with the pool expert. I can't remember his name now. And he would be, you know, was one of those guys. He would like
the
during dull, during dull seasons of the wide world of sports.
They'd come on and
like, you know, all every single billiard ball was out on the table, and he would like hit one, and it would just like they would all go out in order. That's where he did this one where he's like, you know, even when you're just showing off, he's like drinking his beer and does a quick little thing and all the balls go in. And it was just sort of that sort of thing. It's like, you know, at this point I'm just going to show off.
Well, and keep in mind, that last hit, that guy was getting up, right?
Yeah.
Daredevil was camera facing. He was facing the camera. The guy was behind him. And there's all those subtle nods to his power that they don't have to come out and tell you, hey, this is happening. He knows that the guy's getting up behind him, and he knows exactly where he is, and he knows the exact move to hit him in the face and put him on the ground. And you take that in subconsciously. He doesn't get up, turn around, walk over to the guy and punch him in the face. He knows where he is. And there's a lot of that in the show where, in the fight scenes, he just knows where the person is to hit them. Behind them, to the side of him, above him, below him. He knows. And he makes connection. You know, he doesn't take the time to look and find out where the guy is and square it up. He knows. And that's cool. Like, they did such a good job with the action and the fight scenes, the brutality.
Yeah. I mean, like, if the guy's coming up behind him while he's punching another guy, he knows where the guy behind him's groin is to throw a knee or a boot into
it. To make a real quick move to get him out of the way. It's brilliant. All right, we've got to wrap it up. It's been an hour.
It was fun.
I know. Another hour. I'm telling you, we could talk about Daredevil for 5 hours. I know we could.
Yeah. Before we wrap up, again, just the breakaway character we didn't really talk about here, we did touch on as much as we could, was Vincent D'Onofrio as Wilson Fisk.
Oh, yeah.
You know, everything about the layers of the character, it was like...
It was amazing.
Yeah.
Assuming Zuppa Inglaise is a layer cake, that's what you were served with him.
And the argument I've heard is that, you know, people have told me that they don't like that character. You know, they're like, well, I don't like that characterization of that character. And I'm like, why? And inevitably, it comes down to the character makes me uncomfortable.
Well, he's supposed to.
It's not Lex Luthor. Lex Luthor doesn't make you uncomfortable. You identify with Lex Luthor. You know,
right.
Immediately. You get that the idea that Superman is holding back the evolution of humanity. We need to get him out of the way so that humanity can grow. You get this idea of that. The Joker you identify with just through sheer insanity, you know, through sheer madness. The Penguin, you get where the Penguin comes from. You get where, you know, all these characters. The thing is, Wilson Fisk is a reflection of a certain side of everyone's humanity, and it's supposed to make you uncomfortable. He's a guy trying to do the right thing in his mind, and it's...
Well, also, what's really, I think, you're on the right track there, because what Wilson Fisk is the street-level villain. Because here's this guy that came out of obscurity, that came out of, he has adopted his father's ambition, and literally upon the murder of his father, has set himself toward never being that loser. You know, his father was trying to beat into him, you know, never let any, don't take anything from anybody. If somebody gives you trouble, you go kick the shit out of him. Yet, you know, he was always just shy of his own ambitions.
Right.
And you can see in a young Wilson Fisk the sort of idea that I'm never going to be this guy.
Right.
But the thing is, he is and he is not. He's like everything his father was, except a loser.
Well, the awesome parallel dichotomy between, you know, the similar origin stories of Matt Murdock and Wilson Fisk. Both of them had these fathers that were, you know, that wanted to be more than what they were, and both of them, you know, died for one reason or another. Both of them were essentially murdered. For one reason or another, and what the sons take from that and make, and you know, Wilson Fisk's father don't lay, or Matt Murdock's dad, Battling Jack, was, you know, don't take shit from anybody, you know, stand up for who you are, stand up for your morals.
And the East, speaking of Battling Jack, the Easter egg with the fight with Crusher.
With Crusher Creel. Yeah, that was great. And then the other side to that is the Wilson Fisk part, where it's, you know, don't take shit from anybody, but use it to accumulate power to make the world a better place. You know, both of them have the same goal. You know, both of them are going about it differently. Neither one of them is going about it legally. You know, you can't go out and beat the crap out of, that's vigilantism, that's illegal. I can't go out right now and find a guy that, you know, is scalping Reds tickets down at the Cincinnati ballpark and kick his ass and be like, no, it's fine, No.
And then run him up to the police station.
Oh, right.
Yeah. I collared him for you.
I got him for you. I'm a superhero.
My fists and a collar.
Right. Like, that's, you can't do that. So there's that awesome parallel dichotomy there.
Yes.
That you get.
Well, and it ties their characters inexorably together because they are two sides of the same coin in a much stronger way than Batman the Joker.
Right. Or Superman and Lex Luthor or, yeah. You know, any Spider-Man and Osborn, you know, anyone that you would want to name. It's a great story. It not only is it a great comic book show, it's just a great show. And they did a great job of giving you a narrative that if it wasn't a comic book show, if it was a completely original property, it would still be just as good. It's great for Cole and I and Catherine and those guys because it's a comic book show. And because they give us the nod. And they give us the wink and the nod. You know, almost in every episode, whether it be The Hand or Madame Gao or Stick.
Stiltman.
Or Stiltman or the Catholic father in the church from the comics and the gym that he was in from the comics and Foggy Nelson and, you know, everything, you know, nods to, what's her name? Nods to Karen's past that come up in the comics with the drug addiction and the prostitute, like all kinds of stuff. All of that stuff is in there for Cole and I, essentially. But the show is for Catherine. With a passing knowledge of comic books and being interested in it, you know, the nods are for us. The show is for everyone else. And everyone can enjoy it.
I agree.
All right. I need to interject here as we're going to close out on the Daredevil aspect of what we talk about when we talk about Daredevil. And bid adieu to this subject matter, at least in this particular iteration, incarnation, what have you. I do want to, I have to make an editorial disclaimer here and a little bit of errata or addendum to a previous issue, a mere two issues ago.
Okay, what
did
we do?
Andrew and I went full bore into San Diego Comic-Con exclusives.
Oh, yeah. We jumped the gun hard.
Yes, indeed.
And I don't care, because if they wanted us to talk about it, they should have released it early. That's where I'm standing.
That's right, by God. But I have to point out that after that issue aired, there have been probably close to 60 damned exclusives announced. Funko has gone exclusive crazy.
They went banana crackers. On this thing.
Granted, a lot of it's just retooling and repainting of a bunch of crap they've already got, so go screw yourselves, fanboys. You're going to buy it anyway. But then Hasbro, who was painfully silent prior to this, is coming out with a little tiny Ant-Man figurine.
Oh, the Ant-Man set is amazing.
There's two separate...
Yeah,
things.
There is.
The Matchbox set, which is designed to look like a box of matches. And inside is the smallest action figure they've ever made, and I believe 1.1 inches tall.
Right.
And, no, 1.5 inch tall. No, actually, I'm sorry, I stand corrected. It's a 1-inch tall Hank Pym figure in a matchbox of Pym Technologies. And then there's that damned Ant-Man box set that is a, like, multi... scale or multi-sized figures, a 12-inch Giant Man, a 6-inch Goliath, a 3.75-inch Hank Pym in his damn lab coat, and a 1.5-inch Ant-Man. And a 1-inch Ant-Man.
Right.
So for about $65, if you're lucky and get to go to buy one of these in person, and apparently the packaging is designed to look like a screaming Ant-Man with adjustable antenna.
Oh. Right. And keep in mind also as we close that this Ant-Man, this 3¾-inch Ant-Man Hank Pym figure is lab coat Hank Pym.
Yeah.
It's Hank Pym in the Ant-Man suit with a lab coat over it, which is so damn cool. And I think they waited, Cole. I really think.
Oh, yeah.
I think they waited for our show to come out. And then they release this stuff.
Yeah, oh, we're going to show you after 2 or 3 years of you bitching, here's what you're going to get. Oh, guess what, Gentle Giant? Oh, we just finally got around to announcing we're doing a giant-size Secret Wars version of Deadpool.
Right.
We're doing a giant G.I. Joe figure exclusive. We're doing, I think the only thing we knew about was the Star Wars, the Rancor Pit set.
Right.
But, you know, just the crap ton sheer, apparently, it's finally been revealed, even the very bizarre custom figure artist, Dead Greedy, who I had a long discussion with at the Fan Expo in Dallas about a month ago, said he had a potential San Diego exclusive in this sort of dubious kind of repaint, ripoff, rehashed type of thing. But it's actually rather clever. The Mr. TMNT figure.
Oh, nice.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Mr. T.
That's fantastic. All right. Let's wrap it up. We're about 15 minutes over. I know it's my first time back since I moved, and I really want to talk, but, you know, we've all got to go. So
yes, indeed. We so, will it.
Catherine, do you have any final thoughts on this? Like, give your best one-sentence pitch. It's your elevator pitch for convincing people to watch this show.
Okay, go ahead and watch it, because if they're smart, they're going to make more like this, and you don't want to have to go back and watch all this once you're halfway through the second one they made.
I like it. Cole, what's your elevator?
That's a tough act to follow.
Yeah, it is. Like, speak to the urgency, apparently.
You do not have to have seen a single superhero anything to be blown away by Daredevil on Netflix.
That's absolutely true. And I'm just going to say, watch it, because it's everything that you wanted the Avengers Age of Ultron to be and wasn't.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, so with that being said, Cole, why don't you plug us up?
All right, we're coming to you through the auspices of the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com, home of this and other podcasts, the occasional feature articles when I'm finally getting back around to that again, and any number of great fun and FUD. You can write to us, and please do, at jcumail@yahoo.com. You can find, I make occasional convention appearances and occasionally sell crap at conventions. All of which, if they're in the state of Texas, you can find out about at Convention Awareness Project Texas at cap-tx.info. And we've got a lot of great shows coming up the rest of the year, so keep it 100. That is 100 conventions plus this year. And we're going to have some more video content here pretty soon. I've been promising that for a while, but I've got a couple things in mind. I've got a little fun thing I want to do that involves a favorite Legion of Superheroes character from this very show that we talked about.
Very nice.
Another video selfie. We've got a few other little things coming up in the near future. And be sure, and if you're in the Dallas-Fort Worth area in August 22nd, be sure and visit the first ever Jedi Cole Universe comic toy and collectible swap meet at the Bob Duncan Center in Arlington, Texas. You can find out about that, of course, at Convention Awareness Project Texas. Get Texas!
Always. So, all that being said, you know, guys, thanks for sticking around. Thanks for listening. You know, we've got awesome things in store this year. Awesome shows, new story arcs that we're kicking around and discussing. New fun things, video content. You know, recorded video of us recording the show that Cole and I are going to work out how we're going to do at some point, so that you can see our beautiful faces, even though you can't see them on Deep Ellum. But more than anything.
Oh, and thanks for reminding us. Watch Eddie Medina and I on Rancor Pit Live on DeepElementOnAir.com every other Sunday.
There you go. Buy, collect, and enjoy your comics. We always say it, but you know, if you're watching these shows, if you watched Age of Ultron, if you watched Daredevil, or you know, Batman, or whatever it is, and you want more, you don't have to wait a year. You can go buy comic books that this stuff is based on, and read it, and love it, and as much as we do, And so that those are your episodes. You have more than you could ever read between now and the next season of Daredevil. So go check those out. They're well worth it. Go to the library. You can rent them from there. You know, get them on your e-reader. Buy them like Cole and I do, old school, and on actual paper, printed by a printer.
That's right. Especially nowadays where there are so many trade paperbacks of story arcs.
Right.
And go and talk to your comic shop and engage the people there. Find out what they recommend, because there's a lot of great stuff out there. And the better comic shops are the ones where you've got people who can say, yeah, here's something that you might find very engaging. If you like that, then, and they, you know, if you like Daredevil, here's something that has that feel.
Right. All right, guys, we're closing it up. Say goodnight, everybody, and we'll see you next week.
Good night.
Night-night.
Good night, everybody. Thanks for listening.